The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. My guest today is Michael Keating. Michael's been here a couple of times before via phone from Atlanta. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Mark.
Tell people a little bit about who you are and who you work for, please.
I'm a senior editor for American City and County magazine, as well as the Government Product News website, as well as Government Procurement. American City and County magazine serves an audience of city, county, and state officials who develop and implement government policies and programs. And American City and County is a monthly magazine, as well as available on the web. There's a digital edition. The magazine goes to 68,000 readers. We also publish government product news strictly as a web offering, and its audience is mainly state, local, some federal buyers and administrators. Lastly, we offer government procurement. It's a magazine that comes out six times a year, as well as via the web. And government procurement is the official publication of NIGP, the Institute for Public Procurement, and it targets senior public sector purchasing professionals, and government procurement goes to about 23,000 nationwide purchasing professionals.
Yeah, I've met some interesting people by reading the publications, looking them up on LinkedIn, and reaching out to connect.
And they all have Facebook and Twitter offerings as well.
Yep. So our topic for today are the top 10 stories from American City and County for 2015. And the first story is one that we hear in the federal market as well. And Michael, that would be the retirement tsunami. What's going on here?
Yes, Mark. The retirement tsunami ranked first in page views in our American City and County audience. Our audience has a lot of interest in this topic. According to the Pew Research Center, about 10,000 Americans per day will turn 65 between 2011 and 2030, and many of those folks are headed out the door retiring. And we did a survey of our readers, and agencies could lose up to 20% of their 20% of their workforce over the next 5 years due to retirements and turnovers. And the retirement tsunami article offers some solutions or short-term policy changes that local governments are employing to make way for the next generation of workers. Houston, for instance, does a lot of job cross-training to ensure that their employees have the right skill sets as folks retire in the workforce. In Oregon, Multnomah County has a very prominent drive underway to add new workers to their staff levels to replace retirees. And in the county, the HR director is appealing to potential workers, saying, here's a way to give back to your community by joining our county workforce. So there's a lot of effort underway to find the next generation of workers in local governments, and this retirement tsunami article offers some of the solutions. It has statistics on changes underway in retirement benefit plans for government workers. And we also had a couple of survey questions about whether people, older workers, are adequately prepared financially for retirement.
Well, it's kind of a separate issue, but you know, one of the things I found interesting in this article was ICMA did a study, apparently, and Frank Benest of ICMA says that estimates 58% of the manager and professional employees could be retiring in the next 3 years, and I'm assuming that's across county and city governments, and that's a heck of a lot of institutional knowledge.
And is it being captured? And if so, how is it being that knowledge being captured? Some counties, and I see in Texas, are seeing how the petroleum industry is in a state of flux, and so in College Station, Texas, the city and county government are recruiting in the petroleum industry to get potential public works engineers and other staffers.
Okay. Next big topic, number two, is the police body cameras, which has been in the news for many obvious reasons all year long. But your article points out that it could lead to legal policy issues. So what's the scoop on this one?
Indeed, Mark, this write-up in American City and County it talks about what police departments are doing to, as far as retention schedules and policies for police video. How long should video be kept? How should it be kept? What kinds of media? We talked to some police chiefs who offered us the citizens' view on this whole subject. Citizens, according to one police chief, citizens don't want somebody to be able to get police surveillance video, say for a home invasion or whatever, through a public information request. Citizens want some privacy. Say police chiefs we talked to. And also with the technology changes underway in the field, how do we, what new equipment will police departments have to buy if there's a body camera mandate? We got some views from the ACLU on this subject, and we also, as part of this write-up and follow-up, we learned if there's any certification programs out there for police video maintenance, and that's a whole other area, it seems. This article came by way of Urgent Communications, which is a sister publication for American City and County.
Yeah, it's still published by Penton, correct?
Indeed.
Yeah. Penton still has quite the stable of publications here. There was one part of this article that really captured my eye too, and I've been wondering about it myself. These things, these body cameras, they're very small, but they have to be very rugged as well. Any idea how many manufacturers actually are capable of producing something this small, this tough?
I know there's at least three vendors, including Taser, Axon. That one most often comes to mind. Plus any a number of Panasonic, I think, has an offering. I wonder if firms like GoPro might be considering entering the area. Some of these vendors also offer the archiving capability for the video, and I think that's where the biggest revenue opportunity exists, is the whole archiving process. And the technology is changing, and who knows? We saw the FirstNet RFP come through last week. You wonder if FirstNet is going to have any archiving and video capabilities. And time will tell, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it will. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm talking today with Michael Keating of Penton and American City and County. You can find Michael at AmericanCityAndCounty.com. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Michael Keating. I've known Michael for a really long time. We'll get to this a little later on. But Michael's been involved in public sector procurement and writing about the public sector for probably as long as I've been consulting, which takes us both back to the mid-'80s. And Michael may even, I don't know, Michael, have you been doing this longer than that?
Pretty much. I've been here working for American City and County Government Product News magazines and government procurement since 74 thereabouts, and okay. it's lots of changes, and that's what makes it fresh.
Well, you know, you go back to the tsunami. When you leave, you're going to take a heck of a lot of institutional knowledge with you, because the history of these things shows how frequently the same issues come up again and again. So, and that leads us to story number three. In Flint, Michigan, right now, we have an extraordinarily bad problem with drinking water. American City and County's number three story for 2015 is dark water rising. What's this about?
And yes, Mark, this dark water rising outlines what steps local governments are taking to cope with water infrastructure that's just quite old and very fragile and susceptible to breaking. The American Society of Civil Engineers gave America's infrastructure a D grade, covering the country's drinking and wastewater infrastructure. There are reports that local governments will have to spend $300 billion over the next 20 years to fix water infrastructure, water mains, pipes, meters. And folks are saying if immediate action isn't taken, the results could be catastrophic. And we're seeing that in Flint, Michigan, where it looks like federal and state agencies are going to get even more involved. Our write-up on America's failing water infrastructure covered quite a few cities. So we talked to the mayor of Elizabeth, New Jersey, who is trying to keep the infrastructure going. Some of the city itself was 350 years old, and the age of the water system in Elizabeth, New Jersey isn't much younger. And there's a couple of solutions, including revolving loan funds from states to bankroll needed improvements and upgrades. And there's some public-private partnerships, another option for cities looking to upgrade their water systems. It's a couple of different solutions out there, Mark.
Okay. And you and I discussed this offline. In cold weather, we also see, especially those cities with older systems, during truly inclement weather, water lines breaking, those big water mains breaking. And that's an issue, too, for that aging infrastructure. Boy, and the American Society of Civil Engineers gave the infrastructure a D.
And maybe that's we probably should check with the civil engineers groups, material science groups, maybe talk to some academics. Are there any solutions that would help at least reduce the number of water mains that are breaking? And what can we do about sinkholes, some of the other problems? I mean, is there new technology available in this area?
Yep. All right. Number four, the fourth major story from last year is different. San Francisco's Public Works Department is using repellent paint for... You take it from here.
And who knows why this was our leader in page views. The headline was, City Uses Paint to Stop Public Urination. It seems that urine from dogs and humans was damaging the concrete bases of streetlights in San Francisco. And according to web reports, corrosion from urine contributed to the collapse of a three-story light pole in San Francisco recently. The pole fell on a moving car and missed the driver by injuries, missed the driver by inches. No injuries were reported. So the San Francisco's Public Works Commission, besides inspecting all 25,000 light poles to determine which ones need replacing, the Public Utilities Commission, as well as the Public Works Department in San Francisco, is sanitizing urine-soaked walls, alleyways, and equipment using a coating that...
You can mention the company. It's okay.
Oh, it's Ultra Tech International. It makes ultra ever dry paint that serves as a repellent, and it deflects the paint, deflects the urine spray back on the offender. And it's much cheaper using this paint than having crews power wash and steam clean alleyways and sidewalks where they've had a problem. And maybe this article drew so much attention because it's just another example of how the infrastructure is collapsing in the U.S. And here's a technology that this coating paint that is a looks like it's a useful solution. It's this Public Works Department is coating surfaces around the Mission District Transit Station in San Francisco to help alleviate the problem. And I forgot if I mentioned if they have 25,000 light poles in the city, and this might be some preventive maintenance prevent and halt problems with the infrastructure in San Francisco. Yeah, it's and there are a few other vendors who offer products, technology in this area, but UltraTech International is one that's at the forefront.
Well, you know, thank God there seems to be a cure for it, unlike the dark water rising, which is probably going to be a much more costly issue. We're going to start on story number five. Don't know how far we're going to get, but number five is future forecast, government technology in 2020. So you're taking a look ahead here.
Indeed we are, Mark. This item appeared in American City and County Magazine. It's based on a survey of our readers asking what the future holds, and the survey outlined several technology areas. Some of them probably are no surprise. More cloud computing technology in governments, greater use of the clouds. Cybersecurity was an area where our audience said there'll be increased, substantial increased spending in cybersecurity through 2020. The Internet of Things, where sensors and actuators are used and networked to provide data to government officials in areas like traffic management, highway maintenance. Internet of Things is scored high in this survey as part of our future forecast through 2020. More use of public-private partnerships to fund needed improvements in cities. That was yet another growth area in government activity through 2020. And we even asked what's in and what's out as far as technology in 2015, and of course, cybersecurity was at the top. Passwords is where our government's going to go. Some city departments' staffs have, say, a dozen different passwords to log into different systems in a city IT department. There are some vendors who can help reduce the number of passwords and yet ensure cybersecurity. Those are some of the topics we covered: mobility, big data, social media, other growth areas, bring your own device. That's that area of technology government officials expect to grow through 2020.
Yeah, the social media one caught my eye because with the millennials coming into their own, they're going to want / demand governmental services, you know, access via whatever device they have on their body at that particular moment.
And you wonder what the role of, say, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter in government. We see more police departments using their Facebook page to deliver needed information. Mark, you're a LinkedIn expert. Wonder where local governments can use their LinkedIn presences, probably for recruiting. Any other applications?
Well, sharing information, getting feedback from citizens on pretty much any issue they want, but LinkedIn's morphing, so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays into this. Facebook might be better for local governments, but when I'm looking for local government officials, I find most of them on LinkedIn, and I find, 1.6 million feds on LinkedIn. So there are a lot of people there probably using it for very different reasons.
Indeed, and I often use LinkedIn as a source to find interview candidates, subjects for some of the issues we cover in American City and County. It's LinkedIn and even Twitter are really helpful in latching onto experts in the field.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. I'm here today with Michael Keating of American City and County and AmericanCityandCounty.com. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. My guest is Michael Keating of AmericanCityandCounty.com. Michael, story number 6 is Bellmawr, New Jersey closes doors to tourists. Bellmawr is a beach town, right?
Indeed. Indeed it is, Mark. And Belmar's population is usually about 6,000, but the number swells to 60,000 in the summer. Recently, this past June, the mayor, Matt Doherty, announced via Twitter that all traffic into Belmar would be diverted. The mayor's tweet said the town had, quote, reached its capacity. They had pretty massive traffic jams in the area, and the mayor looked at this brief closure as a way to manage traffic. And this is the first time officials had to shut down the city, according to a radio station in New Jersey 101.5. And it was, according to some observers, it was a perfect storm because the 29th Seafood Festival was taking place that weekend, and the weather was perfect, so the town had many more tourists than it had capacity, so that's why the town had to briefly shut down incoming roads. And Belmar residents were still able to enter the town by showing their IDs at the road closures, blockades, and the town reopened to regular through traffic a couple of, looks like 4 hours later. And we've seen this in other communities, maybe not to this level, but where you have massive congestion happening when there's a major event.
Well, the event was some sort of seafood festival, right?
Indeed.
You know, if you know about the festival when you're heading there and you don't live there, boy, what a surprise when you're turned away.
Well, I wonder if Amazon could play a role here. If you're really desperate for some seafood, maybe via Amazon Prime. I wonder if drones could be put into use here.
Deliver the food. Yeah, but you know, but you still miss the ambiance, right? You know, eating there on the beach. All right. The next story is quite interesting to me. Number seven is predicting procurement's path.
Yes, and this is this subject is from our government procurement journal. And like a lot of our top viewed articles, was based on a survey. We asked our audience of government procurement, which is about 23,000 members of NIGP, the Institute for Public Procurement, and other public purchasing professionals. We asked them what they see in the future, and the subjects topics of interest include succession planning tied in with retirements, new technology, cooperative purchasing programs, shrinking budgets, and green purchasing. We also asked where our audience's procurement departments need to be more effective, and looks like the top vote getter was more collaboration across all of an organization's departments, including the departments that buy from the purchasing office, and increased use of procurement technology tools also scored high. Well over 50% of respondents said new technology was an area where procurement departments can improve in the coming years. So this survey was completed early last year, and we'll probably be updating it in the near future. We also asked our audience about the perception of procurement in government agencies, and And we also asked her where our readers see themselves in the next 5 years, retired in the same role, moving to another job outside of procurement. It was, in some ways, it looks like the whole field is undergoing a transformation, looking at our results in our survey, it looks like cloud-based procurement offerings scored highest in new technology coming into the field. Also, big data and mobile procurement. And so those are some of the topics covered in this Predicting Procurement's Path report.
Okay. I will warn our listeners that this is the only article here that requires website registration to get to the content. So probably well worth registering to get there. All of the other stories are open, which leads to story number 8, Michael, the one that I look forward to every year, the Keating Report forecast on government budgets and spending, and this is part 1 for last year.
Indeed. And this came out in January, and I might mention we came out with a mid-year report in June covering forecasts on government budgets and spending, and the trend is in both January and June reports, city revenues are growing a little, but also demands for services by citizens is growing. And in addition, cities have some pretty big bills coming up in the future for covering infrastructure, wage increases, and pension obligations. Even so, local governments are at least the mayors in some of the cities we talked to, they're somewhat optimistic about trends, the fiscal trends in cities and counties in the U.S. And some local governments are trying new ways to obtain revenue and ways to cut costs. Overall, government purchases of goods and services are growing slowly. 2016, according to IHS Global Insight, value of purchases of goods and services by all levels of government will be about $1.24 trillion. And that's up from $1.22 trillion in 2014.
That's a lot of money, Michael. That's waiting for the lotto to get that big.
Yeah, for one, in our mid-year report, 9 out of 10 government officials we surveyed said they'd have equal or bigger budgets in the second half of 2015 compared to the second half of 2014. So a good number of our readers are seeing improved budgets, whether it's enough to meet all the obligations, that varies across the country.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You can find Michael and all these articles at americancityandcounty.com. Look for the top 10 articles of 2015 and click on it. We will be back after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Michael Keating. Michael is a senior editor at American City and County. You can find him at americancityandcounty.com. We're counting down the top 10 stories from American City and County for 2015. And number 9 has attached, Michael, a picture of our mutual friend, Hal Good, former president of NIGP.
Indeed, and former head of purchasing in I think Palm Springs, California, and elsewhere,
and Frederick County, Maryland.
There you go. And also, he runs the Procurement Pros group on LinkedIn.
Yep.
And which is, I hear, about 1,500 members, invited members now of lots of procurement professionals. Check out the LinkedIn site.
Well, Lord knows he studies that a lot. So the topic for that particular story is Co-op Purchasing Best Practices Part 2, and it came out in June. So what are the best practices?
Yes, Hal goes over a number of ways that public purchasing agencies can maximize the benefit of cooperative purchasing, which can include piggyback purchasing, piggybacking on another government contract, or buying through a national co-op that provides options for governments. Hal lists several best practices. And one of his best practices is that procurement departments need to see what their government's enabling legislation allows in the cooperative purchasing function. Some enabling legislation says a government can only participate in a cooperative award if it was competitively bid on specification and price. And there's a bunch of other ways Hal advises purchasing pros in this area. Mark, I might mention we did an earlier best practices for using co-ops, and one of the suggestions was that purchasing officials need to spot check the cooperative's price for a given commodity, match it up against the prices offered by local bidders and local vendors, and some purchasing officials say it's important to buy local because you want to ensure that the local economy remains vibrant and that governments need to support local vendors and suppliers.
The buy local thing has backfired in a couple of instances where, you know, in North Carolina, they passed legislation. I think I saw this in American County, City and County, and I saw it in the High Point, North Carolina publication as well, where the state of North Carolina required state agencies to purchase only from North Carolina vendors. Now, North Carolina does produce a lot of furniture.
Indeed, it does. And Hal Good says that public purchasers can really benefit from cooperative buying, and as purchasing department staffs get more lean, cooperative buying is one way to save time rather than a city go out for through the lengthy bid process. It might be better, make more sense for a city or county to buy through, off of a state contract or through an outside entity that manages a whole galaxy of cooperative contracts. I wonder what you were mentioning about that furniture, Mark. Wonder what the solution was.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the solution was. I just know that a lot of furniture vendors, resellers for the most part, in other states went to their state capital saying, hey, you know, complain to the governor there or whatever. So I don't know if there was significant fallout. I just know that there was a little hubbub. But on the larger cooperative, national cooperative purchasing scene, NASPO even came out earlier this year forming a procurement organization. That was another story that I saw in, I think it was in Government Procurement Magazine.
Indeed, and NASPL has an issue brief on, it's an introduction to cooperative procurement, and Mark, I will send you a link to that item. I've got a wealth of information on the value and benefits of cooperative contracts and the evolution of cooperative purchasing. I'll also send you, Mark, a link to the GSA's cooperative purchasing page through GSA. Governments can buy off of Schedule 70 and Schedule 84, which is 70 is IT equipment. Schedule 84 is
emergency
security and law enforcement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in addition, the governments in a disaster situation, governments can buy directly from all of the GSA schedules, so that state and local governments can buy directly from all GSA schedules if their community is in a disaster situation.
Okay, and I will post those links on the Federal News website, so federalnewsradio.com, search AmTower, look for my interview with Michael, and we'll have those links there. Michael, the last story in your top 10 for 2015 came out April 13th, 2013, and oddly enough, it's best practices for using co-ops. So once again, this is a very big issue for state and local governments.
Indeed, and we have found our American city and county readers are eager to learn more about the value of using co-ops and when is it appropriate to use cooperative purchasing in government entities. And we've had a series of items on that topic, and some of our purchasing officials we interviewed talk about how vendors are becoming more receptive to selling through a cooperative contract, and local government purchasing officials say likewise for local government agencies, cooperative contract offers a lot of benefits, including saving staff time in the process for obtaining needed goods and services. This best practices item lists several important issues that need to be addressed, such as what entity is managing the cooperative contract for a given commodity, and one other best practice is to always look closely to make certain that a government is obtaining the best price, since there are several cooperative offerings for many commodities, and you have to shop around. Say some of the people we interviewed for this best practices for using co-ops item that originally appeared in our Government Procurement Magazine, which is a sister publication of American City and County.
Yeah, and both really good to read. I have them, the websites bookmarked, which is where I do most of my reading for American City, County, and Government Procurement. Michael, thank you for running through the top 10 stories for me. Always great to have you here.
It's a joy, Mark AmTower, and glad to help. And your readers can go to our AmericanCityAndCounty.com site and learn more about our publications.
Indeed, and the link will be on our federalnewsradio.com site. The interview will be up there for quite some time. This is not my day job. If your company needs help marketing your services to the government, my Government Market Master Program has 6 4-hour workshops that can help you in all facets of marketing to the government. Check us out at federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.